Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
I want to ask you guys this question. 913-586-7965. Have you guys heard the Mel Turpin story? I'm going to tell you the Mel Turpin story. It's actually one of my favorite Michael Jordan stories, and I think it applies to the Royals. So Mel Turpin was a center for the Utah Jazz, and the Bulls were playing the Utah Jazz. Michael Jordan steals the ball, goes coast to coast, and dunks on John Stockton. There is a fan in the crowd that says, "Why don't you dunk on someone your own size?" In Michael Jordan fashion, the next time down the floor, he dunks on Mel Turpin, and he goes to the fan and says, "Is he big enough?" This is my question to you guys. And Rob, maybe we are talking to a small portion of Royals fans, but it does feel like usually there is an asterisk by when the Royals beat somebody. Oh, well, it was just the White Sox. Oh, well, it was just so-and-so. That, yes, during this streak, the Royals certainly haven't beat a who's who of opponents. I mean, they've beat up on Baltimore. Baltimore is 13-23. They beat up on Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay is 16-21. They kicked off this streak by beating up on the Colorado Rockies. They're 6-31. The Rockies are 18 games out of first place in their division. They're embarrassing. They just swept the Chicago White Sox. So I don't want to paint it like the Royals have just beat up on a murderer's row of opponents. But they've also won 15 of their last 17 games. I don't really care who they've been against. So to go back to the analogy, I want to know, is the Boston Red Sox, are they tall enough? Because the Boston Red Sox are in second place in their division. Boston would be a playoff team if the postseason ended today. Boston is over 500. There is no poking holes in this series win, right? Because if I'm looking at teams that are in their weight class, Boston is certainly in their weight class. Now, the Royals have a better record than them, but if you look at Boston, their run differential is about the same. These are two very evenly matched teams. This is also an offense that can score. To give you a comparison, the Royals have scored 139 runs. The Red Sox have scored 191 runs. So for your pitching staff, for your rotation, you're going up against a pretty competent offense. The only team in the American League, teams that have scored more runs so far this season than the Boston Red Sox, are the Tigers and the Yankees. Both teams are leading their division. So my question, Rob, is, if the Royals beat the Red Sox in the series, is that going to end the, well, who have they beaten conversations? Because it feels like that is always sort of a cloud hanging over anything that the Royals do. Oh, well, they can't do it against these kinds of teams. Well, isn't Boston that caliber of team? We're not saying that the only teams the Royals can show you that against are against the Mets, Dodgers, and Yankees, right? Boston is that kind of team. This is a playoff team. This is like beating the Tigers. This is like beating the Cleveland Guardians. This is beating, if you win this series, this is beating a team that could win their division and another possible playoff team. I think that's a really encouraging sign if the Royals win this series.
I understand why people play the scheduled game with the Royals in baseball. I hate it, but I understand why it happens. But I think what people fail to understand is more often than not, really good to great teams are gobbling up most of their wins against bad teams in baseball. Because maybe more than any sport we talk about, the difference between the have and the have-nots is a chasm in baseball. And other teams that are good get to experience this same chasm. If you are a Royals fan, you think, well, all they did, Rob, was last week they swept the Rays. The Rays stink. Do you know who plays the Rays a lot this year? The Yankees. Are we going to say, hey, ho, 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 the Yankees' greatness is fake because they got to play the Rays. The Rays stink. No, we only seem to do that locally. Out west, the Angels are also really bad. Like, they're not Rockies, White Sox bad, but they're real bad. teams are going to beat up and feast on them. The Mariners have a massive run differential and are very good this year. I'm betting, I haven't combed through their schedule, if I did, I'm betting they've throttled the Angels a bunch this season. That's just the way it goes. So I understand why people play the schedule game with the Royals, and it feels like their heating up is based on schedule, and that's very possible. But I think that's just the nature of baseball. Football, because of the salary cap and the schedule imbalance and all the things, it automatically pushes everyone to the middle. It kind of crunches people. So when you are a 9-8 Broncos team and you make the playoffs, and you can say, well, it's very schedule driven, that's not really how baseball operates. So I wish the cynics would just take a step back and realize this is the way it works for every team. The Dodgers are one of the super haves in baseball. They get to play the Rockies a bunch this season, and they've played the Pirates. Like, these things happen in baseball more so than most sports, so I do not like the schedule game in baseball.
Yeah, I mean, I understand the schedule game to some point, but one thing that I don't think that we've been very fair about is, and I put myself in this category too, because a stat that I was using early in the season was, hey, if you look at the Royals' record against teams that aren't the White Sox, they've been kind of average. And the Royals, a big reason of why they made the postseason, like, it's undeniable, a big reason of why the Royals made the postseason last year was how good and dominant they were against the White Sox. I also don't think we're factoring in, if we go back in time, I'm going to guess there are teams that made the postseason. You want to know why they made the postseason? They beat up on the Royals. I'm going to guess a lot of those Twins teams from the early 2000s that we looked at, like, oh man, look at how good those Twin teams are. I'm guessing if we go back, they used to pummel the Royals, and they used to feast on a bad team. The Tigers, remember when the Tigers were the White Sox, and they were one of the worst teams we've seen in baseball. I'm guessing that a lot of those Twins teams used to beat up on the Royals and beat up on the Tigers, and they were able to win 95, 94 games. If you're going to win the amount of games that you think the Royals can win, yes, you need to pick up a lot of those wins. Because to your point, Rob, and where we do agree is, there's just more of those kind of wins than the good ones. You only play the Yankees 6 times in the year. You ain't picking up 11 or 12 games against the Yankees. Well, you play the White Sox 13 times. So yeah, you need to pick up 11 of those wins. You play the A's. You play these teams. So when you get a chance, when you get your opportunity, you need to get them. Because you're right, if you're looking at the standings right now, there's not a lot of those wins that you would consider them to be gimmies. I would argue last year, a reason on why the Royals didn't win their division, do you remember that stretch where they played the Marlins and the A's? And you're thinking, hey, you got to get right in this stretch. And the Royals didn't get right. Well, when you go then and you look back at the standings and you narrowly miss winning the division, you lose it by 2 or 3 games, hey, you point back to those and if you had took care of your business in those games, because the Royals last year, they were very competitive against the Tigers, very competitive against the Guardians. They dominated the White Sox. They just had a couple of pockets where they slipped up. Give the Royals this. When they have had a layup on the board, they've made it. They have played 7 games against the, or 8. They have played 8 games against the Rockies and the White Sox. They've won all of those games. Yeah, that's what you're supposed to do. You find yourself 7 games over 500. So yeah, you've been 500 in those other games, and then when you got a meal on your plate, you have eaten it. So that's why I asked the question about the Royals. Is this enough? Are you not entertained? Because on Monday, I don't want to hear, oh, well, Boston's under 500. You wonder why they're under 500? Because they just lost to the Royals. That's why they're under 500. So I don't want to play that game on Monday with the Royals. So I just want to know at the very beginning. Heading into this series, these are two teams that would be in the postseason today. These are two teams that are over 500. This is a team that has a bigger payroll. This is a team that has big names on their team. Last year, one of their players was the All-Star MVP. They got Alex Bregman on their team. They got Rafael Devers on their team. I'm not poking any holes in what the Royals accomplished this weekend if they take 2 or 3 or sweep the series against the Red Sox.
I think maybe this show does it more than the average person, but that's fine. We're a big point differential, run differential type of show. The Royals and Red Sox have a very similar run differential. Now it's 40 games, or I guess 39. We're not at the 40-game yet mark yet. But they're both similar teams. So the Royals take 2 of 3, and that means that by Monday's show, well, the Red Sox are now 20-22, so are 20-21. So it's just another example. You know what? It's the Royals taking care of business. And you mentioned you know, when there's food on your plate, eat your food. Do you know why the Minnesota Twins, like if we went up and we talked to Henry Lake or someone who covers the Twins and we said, hey, how come the Twins didn't make the postseason last year? Like they were battling right to the end. What happened? You know what they would say? The White Sox started beating the Twins in September. Remember that stretch where suddenly the White Sox staved off being the worst team in baseball history? And they did it by beating the Twins. The Twins are probably a playoff team last year if they just take care of business against the White Sox. So I'm not going to be the person to poke holes in, well, the Royals taking care of business against bad teams. Yeah, that's their job. If you are a team that's going to compete for the division and be a wild card team if you fall short, you know what you're going to do? You're going to beat the teams you're better than. You're going to compete to a 50-50 with the teams that are similar to you, and you're probably going to lose the better teams. The Royals are doing that, and that's all we've asked of them. That's what 88 to 90 win teams do every year in baseball.
We can take you guys' phone calls on this if you would like. 913-586-7965. There has been some conversation about the Royals and who they've beaten and who they've played. They got a good team coming into Kauffman this weekend, over 500. I want to see the Royals win this series and continue the positive momentum that they've had. We'll keep talking Royals baseball. They've been the hottest team in baseball. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison, your home for the best food takes in KC.
Regular old American nachos. You know, I don't need jalapenos with mine, just chips, cheese.
Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
You guys know I love a good cross-sport comparison. So we were talking about this. One criticism that people have for the Royals is their schedule. If you want to look at it, you can look at it this way. The Royals this season are 16-16 against everybody that's not the White Sox and the Rockies, the two worst teams in baseball. So they have been 500 against everybody else, and they have been perfect against the two worst teams. They find themselves 23-16 and one of the hottest teams in baseball. During this stretch, the Royals have certainly not beat a murderer's row of teams. But what they have done is beat the teams that are in front of them, get back on track, and be the hottest team in baseball. My question to you guys were, are we going to do this if they beat the White or the Red Sox? If they beat the Red Sox this weekend, I don't know how you can really poke any holes in it. They come to Kansas City over 500. They are a better offense than the Royals. The Royals have scored 139 runs. The Red Sox have scored 191 runs. So they are a far superior offense to the Royals. They spend more on players than the Royals. They have a better lineup than the Royals do. I don't know if we're going to be able to poke holes in this one. We got this text during the commercial break. CDOT, unless the Royals are in first place of their division and have a winning record against teams that are above 500, then all of this feels irrelevant. They've played well, essentially, against the worst teams in the league, so let's just not get too excited yet. This is the cross-sport comparison, and this is where I don't think that we're fair to the Royals. I think you're asking the Royals sometimes to score 40, but not do any of the things that usually come when you score 40 points. Now, we've all seen a basketball player have a really good day. Rob, when a basketball player is usually in the zone, yes, sometimes they are hitting some incredible shots. They're knocking down threes. You know what they also are doing? Getting easy buckets and layups. You know what they're also doing when you score 40? You get to the free throw line and you go 7 of 8 from the free throw line. You're getting your points a lot of different ways. I do feel like sometimes what we do with the Royals is, well, I got them winning 88 games. Well, then 88 of those wins are not going to be against the Dodgers and the Yankees and the Mets. A lot of those games are going to be against these teams. So that's why I am in the category of, hey, get them how you get them. Now, maybe I am a little bit of, I'm cool with them just kind of being a B student. We've used that analogy before. I don't think the Royals are winning the World Series, but I'm happy that we are now discussing the Royals as a playoff team, as a team that is going to keep our interest, as a team that we are expecting them to be a part of October baseball, and we got real expectations about them adding payroll, playing in the postseason, how they match up with teams. The Royals have just not been in that position too many times since I've been alive. So maybe I'm just content with the fact of they're going to be an 86-win team and they'll probably lose in the first round of the postseason. I'll take that. But I don't think it's fair, I think, to hold the Royals to this standard, and then when they are doing the things that you have to do to get to 90-plus wins, we then can't be critical of the fact of them doing what... You don't get to 90 wins unless you beat up on the White Sox. You don't get to 90 wins unless you beat up on the Colorado Rockies. Or you take care of business against Tampa Bay and Baltimore. You don't get to 90 wins unless you do that.
I don't know the texter is one of these people, but what frustrates me about this conversation specifically is I feel like, and I understand why we hold the Royals and Chiefs to different standards, but Carrington, me and you were doing the show last fall, and you know what the Chiefs are doing? They were getting a lot of one-score wins, and we had people come on the show, and we played clips about how, hey, they're not really that good of an undefeated team because they just keep, you know, skating by, and their point differential isn't great, and, you know, one-score wins are not sustainable. And we would have these conversations, and the text line would be irate. Why are you guys talking about style points? Wins are wins. It doesn't matter who or the how. All you got to do is walk away with a win. All that matters is wins. Winning is the only thing. Those are the texts we got when we had those conversations in October, November, December. Fast forward to May, we have a conversation of, hey, the Royals are, you know, one of the hottest teams in baseball. They're 15-2 since April 20th. They are red hot, and they're taking on one of the best teams in baseball. And those same texters are texting him like, well, calm down. These wins are only because it's bad teams. Like, let's see what happens when they play the good teams. Where was the crowd in November that was irate when Mike Renner on CBS, this is a fraudulent undefeated team because of their point differential? Where are the texters that were telling me wins are wins when Lewis Riddick or Mike Greenberg said this is basically that Vikings Case Keenum team? All I saw in the text line was wins are wins. Doesn't matter the how or the why. How come with the Royals, the how and the why matter so much? If we're going to have these conversations now, and I don't mind having schedule-driven conversations. I don't like them, but we can have them. I want that same energy for the Chiefs that they're 4-0 and they win four games by a field goal each time. I don't want to hear, well, wins are a win. It's either that or it's style points matter. And I feel like we hold the Royals the standard of, well, it's only because teams are bad, ho-hum. And when the Chiefs are doing it, it's shut up, Rob. No one cares about point differential. All that matters is, did you chalk up a dub?
This is where I think it's unfair to make that comparison. Is I think we all know the Chiefs just play at a different level, and I think that's it. This is where I tell you all the time. I think that baseball owners have done they have pulled the greatest ruse on baseball fans ever. I think there is a portion of baseball fans that don't see the value of being competitive every day. We talk about it being in purgatory. Well, I mean, what's the point of just going 9-7 every single year? What's the point of just winning 85 games and you can't win the World Series? They're a team that you want to go out and watch. They're a team that's fun. That seems like a great value to me. That's where I think baseball, like if you're telling me, if you have grown up in Kansas City and are a Royals fan, you're telling me that you are unhappy or find ways to poke at the Royals, who could be an 87-win team that could lose in the wild card or second. What? Because I'm guessing you sat through a lot of miserable springs and summers watching this baseball team, like a bunch of them. So I guess maybe I'm just not, maybe it's still new enough to me, and maybe I'll feel this way in 3-4 years. Like, I mean, we kind of done this before. Hey, when are you guys going to take that next step? The Royals being good and relevant is still a brand new thing to me at this level every day. It's been a decade since we've been having a lot of these conversations. So maybe I am part of the problem that I am not pushing them to excel for more. I also just think that this is kind of one of those things, and you and I do this in the NFL, and we can move on from this part of the conversation, is we do the schedule game a lot in the NFL too. Well, every win you're not going to have is against the Chiefs, Eagles, or the Bills. Like, there's just way more teams in the middle than there are at the top of these things. So you're right. We saw the Royals go up against the Guardians. They didn't win those series. We saw the Royals go up against the Yankees. You're right. But there's a lot of those teams that you think are in the 6-20 range in Major League Baseball, and I think that's firmly where the Royals are. If you can continue to pick up enough of those wins, then you get to the 85, 86, 87, and you give yourself a chance to win the division and do something in the postseason.
Also, to people's point, and I saw this texter earlier, I'm trying to find the exact verbiage, the idea that unless they're leading the division, it all seems for naught. Again, I'm going to cross-sport compare here. Where's the blind optimism for the Royals that other teams in town get? Carrington, Kansas was a 7 seed and Missouri was a 6 seed in the NCAA tournament. But me and you as fans, and we were not alone, Missouri and Kansas fans were also following in our wake, had convinced themselves, hey, you know, if you get past that first round game, hey, the second round, you know, matchup could go their favor.
I don't really know what gave you reason to do that last year.
Because I didn't believe in St. John's.
Yeah, I don't know what gave you reason to do that.
I knew St. John's was a phony. That's why I did it. I was like, they can pass Arkansas. St. John's is big fraud. And I talked myself and deluded myself into believing they can make a run. But you did it with Mizzou. You felt like if they can get past Drake, Texas Tech is gettable.
I felt like they could have won the whole thing if they had just beat Drake.
Exactly. My point is, you were not the only Missouri fan saying that. But with Royals fans, it's, well, if they're not going to win the World Series, it feels like it's all for naught. What? Where's the blind optimism of let's get in the dance and see what happens? We have that for every other team locally in every other sport. Carrington, if K-State football was playing in the first round of the college football playoff on the road at, I don't know, pick a school, Ohio State. They're playing on the road. They're the 5-12 game, and they're heading to Columbus. K-State fans would convince themselves, hey, we can win this game. If we can beat them, we can then go beat Oregon. We can make a run. Watch out for the Cats. With the Royals is, I mean, it just feels like if you're not winning the World Series, who cares? Where is the let's get in the dance and see what happens energy for the Royals? Every other team in town gets it in some form or fashion. The Royals don't seem to. And I think it's because Royals fans have beaten their fan base down with the losing for so long that people can't see the glimmer of hope. But Bobby Witt, Cole Reagans, and this group have earned the glimmer of hope. They are probably an 85 to 90 win baseball team that's either going to, you know, with their chewing on their fingernails, win the division or be the second or third wild card. But with that pitching staff and the star they have at shortstop, you can't convince yourself that 85 could turn into, oh my goodness, look, we're deep into October. It just seems like fans, to your point about the owners pulling the wool over people's eyes, feel like, well, they're not the 15 team, so what's the point? There's a major point.
I want to play this audio for you guys. So let's get away from the Royals for just a little bit. And there could be some potential changes in college football. The way that they do things in college football very rarely makes any sense to me. I mean, they had a 4-team playoff system, even though there were 5 power conferences. Like, I don't know how they didn't see that that was eventually going to cause an issue and that they were going to argue over it. Like, if you have 5 kids and you only have 4 suckers, can't you imagine that there's going to be a fight in the back seat because one kid isn't going to have one? So obviously that wasn't enough. Then we went to a 12-team playoff. I think we saw that 12 is actually too many for a playoff, but we don't care about that. They are now discussing a 16-team playoff in college football. Here's Pete Thamel.
This is the final season. We're going to be at 12, and they've kind of soft agreed to go to 14 for the next iteration of the playoff. I believe it's a 6-year run from 26 to 31. As the discussions have been honed in on that, there's been recent momentum for what was expected to be and thought to be a 14-team playoff to go to 16. And a lot of this comes down to automatic qualifiers. Automatic qualifiers are controversial in some sense because the Big Ten, the SEC, are likely to have double what the Big 12 and the ACC have. So there's been some pushback on that. But as it has gone forward and the conversations have continued, Big Ten Commissioner Tony Petitti has been very bullish on automatic qualifiers. Greg Sankey, the SEC commissioner, has been a little more guarded in revealing what his hand is. But the notion that I've gotten, especially in like the last week, is Sankey has started to align himself more with Petitti on the potential of 4, and the compromise of all this is to create more spots for the college football playoff, which is why 16 has really come into focus.
I want to help college football, and I have an idea that could help them do this. I really do. I have an idea. Now, maybe they don't want to hear this idea, but if they made me commissioner of college football, this is how I'd fix it. Those games that they play against Arkansas, Little Rock, Tech, that waste everybody's time, I'd move those games to the spring. There still is a place for those games. People will pay and show up for those games. Hey, I want to see KU's new quarterback or Missouri's new quarterback or whomever. I would move those games in place of the spring to free up the fall, to free up the actual season. They're basically exhibitions anyway. So put them during a time in which you schedule exhibitions. You schedule them in the spring. I would then make it where you have to play two real games. Let's get these nonsense games out of the way. You got to play at least one major conference team and one group of five school. So if you're Missouri, you got to play a team that is in the ACC, Big Ten, another team, and then you can play UNLV, Tulane. So let's make the schedule more uniform. All right, let's now play 8 regular season games in your conference. So everybody play 10 Big Ten or 8 Big Ten games, 8 SEC games. And then this would solve a lot of the problem. Why doesn't the SEC have their own form of a playoff to help determine who would make the national playoff? I mean, that's what we have in the NFL, right? The AFC has their own form of the playoff. You don't play every team in the AFC. You play some NFC teams. You play some of these teams. But in the end, hey, you guys have the best records, and now we have put you in there, and we see if you can advance. I would actually be in favor of a system that included that. Hey, we think these are the 4 best teams in the SEC. We're going to have these 4 teams play each other, and these 2 are the representatives for the SEC. We're going to play them at neutral sites. We don't need the SEC championship game anymore. It doesn't serve the same purpose that it used to. We don't need the Big 12 championship game or the Big 10 championship. Some of this takes some imagination. Some of this takes you cannot use the same model that you had in 1981. You cannot use that in 2025 because the qualifications are different and the objective of the season is different. Yes, it used to be if you won the SEC championship game, you automatically went to this bowl game. That's not the format that we have anymore. So you need to change the format. That's how I would do it. That would be my fix. I think it would be better for everybody if these conferences started having their own form of the playoff that then fed into the national playoff. That's how you can fix this. Or we'll just keep arguing every year. And I mean, I guess, man, that's what college football wants. Us to just keep arguing every year. I would like a little bit more uniformity in figuring out what a playoff team is. March Madness works because at this point, we know what a 1 seed is, a 2 seed is, all the way down the line. Sure, we think they misseed things, but for the most part, we feel pretty confident in the process of how they determine what a playoff team is. We don't know what the process is in college football. It's a lot harder to figure it out. So making it more uniform and standard across the board would be in the best interest of everybody if that's what they want to do.
Here's the thing, and we can be honest about why they're talking about expanding to 14 and 16. It's because last year, the big talking point from a team that got left out, there was one team that felt like they got left out. It was Alabama. And they whined and they cried and they moaned that it's not fair that little old Indiana and little old SMU got into the tournament and we didn't. And they threw a little pity party as fans. So what did the committee do? Well, we got to find a way to get Bama in. We got to find a way to get to 14 or 16 because, you know, Team 17's complaint is going to, you know, fall on deaf ears. We are perfect at 12. Would I adjust the automatic qualifiers? Yes. Would I tweak scheduling with you? Yes. Do I think the SEC playing 8 conference games and 4 non-cons is stupid? Yes. Do I think it's cowardice? Also, yes. I would be all for those changes you laid out. But we don't need to go to 14. We don't need to go to 16. 12 actually works because 9-3 Alabama, as the 13th team in the country that had to sit on the outside and watch the tournament, your complaints are invalid. You lost 3 regular season games. I'm sorry that you lost 3 regular season games. I'm sorry you couldn't go down to dreaded old Nashville and beat Vanderbilt. I'm sorry that happened to you, but it did happen. This is the punishment. You don't get to make the real tournament. One of the reasons why you talk about we know what a tournament team looks like in basketball is you and I know what team 65 or 69 looks like. They don't look good enough. We now know in football with 1 year of data, I know what team 13 and 14 look like. They're probably not good enough because you have to reward the other teams. We don't have to expand for the sake of expansion. I think we have a good system. We need some scheduling tweaks and some automatic qualifier tweaks. That's it. We don't need to throw everything out and restart again.
Text line 913-586-7965 CDOT, those small schools wouldn't agree to your format because the payoffs wouldn't be what they are. In what world do we think that college football is accommodating what the small schools think is in their best interest? At this point, the only thing that matters about college football is how do you get to the college football playoff? So I am trying to imagine and invent a season that would maximize our ability to figure out who goes there. So, yes, we would have to radically change the format of what we're doing here. But I do think that part of the problem with college sports in general is you're trying to do a hybrid of what you've always done in a new world and a new vision. Well, when you built the schedule and the format for college football, it was drafted. The AP writers dictated and voted who won the national championship. That's not the format anymore. So why don't we reimagine the schedule that fits how we actually determine how you advance in this thing? CDOT, you would never get Appalachian State over Michigan to get in your scenario. That is something that I'm willing to trade for. Someone else also asked the question, CDOT, do you really think they would get rid of conference championships? I don't think you have to get rid of the idea of them in my scenario. You just need to change them. You just need to change them. In my scenario, they would just have an SEC playoff. At some point, Buffalo can't advance in the NFL season anymore. I'm saying is let's create a system where, hey, Alabama and Georgia, none of this, well, I mean, it doesn't really matter who wins or loses. I mean, both of you are going to make it. No, that's what the regular season is for, not the postseason. Both of you don't get to advance. We did the regular season. That gives you the seeding on where you potentially sit. All right, well, Alabama, you were better in the regular season. You get to host this game. Georgia, if you want to advance in your season, you need to, that. This is our playoff. That's how I would do it. I just think the college football needs a little bit of imagination on how they want to do this playoff thing, or they'll just continue to do it and we'll just keep arguing over it. Like, we don't really argue about who makes the baseball playoffs. We don't argue about who makes the NFL playoffs or the NBA playoffs. The system is right there. It's pretty straightforward. Every team follows the rules. And at the end of it, if you don't make the playoffs, I mean, we argue a little bit about who doesn't make the college basketball tournament, but I mean, it's kind of small. I mean, we argue about that for about 2 hours and it's, hey, you weren't good enough. Let's move on. Let's get to the brackets. We spend all season arguing about who's going to make the college football playoff. There just seems to be a better way of actually determining it. And then we can talk more about the games and how they win instead of arguing whether or not you like Indiana or South Carolina when there's not really a clear metric on what team is better than the other one. And then we have to just use our eye test and our biases. Just feels like there's a better way to determine who we think is going to make the postseason. Earlier on the show today, we had Vern. We'll play some of that for you. The Royals are red hot right now. Keep it right here. So drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
All right, I want to give you guys as much Royals as we can before we have to sign off today. Earlier today, we had Josh Vernier on the show. Always great to catch up with our Royals insider. And we talked about Mikel Garcia, who has just been on fire of late for the Royals.
Last time I checked, there were only two hitters in the big leagues with a better batting average and a higher slugging percentage than Mikel Garcia, and it's Pete Alonso and Aaron Judge. Throw on top of that the guy can play shortstop on an everyday basis at the big league level. Last year, he was one of the top five base runners in the sports. I still think he's one of the top 20 defensive infielders in the sport. He's hitting for average. He's showing enough extra base power, and we know he has a really good arm. You know, you talk about that step back that he took last season. I think most of that just was maturation, a lack thereof, a 24-year-old that needed to grow up. Now, I didn't grow up, in my opinion, until I was like 31, maybe 32. So I have grace for a guy like Mikel Garcia. But to see him make this leap, keep in mind, he's only 3 months older than Bobby Witt Jr. He right now looks like a guy that you're going to have to pay $100 million plus to when his time comes if you don't beat him to the punch. Honestly, he looks like the guy that would have made Jonathan India stay in Cincinnati, right? Maybe you still trade Brady Singer, but if this Michael Garcia was present last year, you're not trading Brady Singer for Jonathan India. You're trading him for something else, but certainly not a leadoff hitter, because Michael looks every bit of a leadoff hitter, of a two-hitter. He's just a terrific five-tool talent.
I was just going to ask you, do you see a scenario in which the Royals shake up the lineup?
No, not until it's dire with India, and like I mentioned, he's picked it up of late. No, because of what I talked about, the same reason why I'm not expecting Carlos Estevez to leave the closer's role anytime soon. It's still a business. You made a business move in parting with Brady Singer to bring in Jonathan India, and the people that made that decision are going to give a long leash to Jonathan India in that leadoff spot, because that's what you brought him here to do. It's certainly not to play defense. It's to hit leadoff and get on base. You brought Carlos Estevez here and gave him more than $20 million to be your closer, to get those final three outs, and he's doing a pretty good job of it. I know Lucas Erceg looks like Wade Davis right now, but Wade Davis pitched in the eighth inning in 2014 when he was arguably the greatest reliever since Mariano Rivera, so I don't see any need to shuffle up really much with this team.
Right now we're talking to Josh Vernon. You're talking about the Royals, who are the hottest team in baseball. Let's talk about the pitching here. This team right now, I don't think we've ever been able to say this, Vern, they might have too much starting pitching. Like, most teams keep up Noah Cameron after the start, at least give him another one. Like,
yeah.
And there wasn't really room for him to be here. I think if you were talking top to bottom, this might be the most complete, from starting pitching to bullpen, this might be the most complete pitching staff that I've ever seen them build.
Yeah, you think of the second half of 2015, on paper, Cueto, Volquez, Yordano was a pretty strong 1-2-3 led by a true ace in Cueto, but I think Reagans is now, or at least should now, be viewed as one of those true aces. Chris Bubich is knocking on the door. You dive into whatever metric you want to dive into. It says he's one of the 20 best pitchers in Major League Baseball, and he's your number four. The reigning runner-up for the American League, Cy Young, and Seth Lugo, and Michael Wacha, who, according to the metrics, is one of the 15 best pitchers right now in Major League Baseball. Yeah, Noah Cameron. Tough news today with Kyle Wright, as some shoulder fatigue is going to force the team to skip his next few starts as he tries to recover from a litany of injuries that have had him out of the big league since 2023. But still, to have a guy, to your point, to have a guy like Noah Cameron, who takes a no-no into the seventh inning in his big league debut, to have that guy throwing BBs down in Omaha because there's not a spot for him in the rotation in the big leagues is a terrific problem to have. And if he continues to dominate, maybe Lorenzen goes to the bullpen and Cameron makes his way back to the big leagues, or maybe in the second half of the season, like we saw with Daniel Lynch, maybe Cameron finds his way into the bullpen. I think the former is more likely. I think him entering the rotation and Lorenzen going to the bullpen is more likely. But to have those type of options, to your point, is remarkable.
Or possibly, Vern, the Royals have ammunition to go get an outfielder for this team.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Not only those names I just mentioned, and boy, would Kyle Wright be nice, a 29-year-old that's already won 20 games in a season at the big league level, but the Royals have some interesting pieces at the lower levels of the minor leagues as well. And listen, you know, Aroldis Chapman's in town with the Boston Red Sox right now, and I don't think any Royals fan can view him without thinking of Cole Reagans. There's no reason to believe that this organization will be anything but aggressive going into the July 31st trade deadline. So, yeah, whatever it is that ails this team, you know, last year it was the bullpen. You bring in Lucas Erceg and Hunter Harvey, you throw Daniel Lynch out there, and you felt really good about your bullpen down the stretch. If we're still lamenting this right field, one of the corner outfield spots, right? I think it's only down to one. I think we're happy with Drew Waters playing 5 out of 7 games. But yeah, if you're looking for that thump, that true number five hitter, that Kendrys Morales type for this team, I have no reason to believe that this organization won't part with something that they prize to go further than they did last season, to win the whole damn thing.
Vern, which one happens first? Is it Cags comes up or MJ comes back?
Boy, good question. Well, I don't see either happening before the All-Star break. So I'll say, boy, that's a really good question, because injury could have MJ here sooner. But even with injury, I don't believe that happens before the All-Star game. You need to get him right top to bottom. But an injury right after the All-Star break in early August, in a pinch, MJ could find himself up here for a week. I don't see the team taking a mega nosedive to the point where you're saying, all right, Cags is now out of the question, because we don't want him viewed as a savior. We want him to join this team as a weapon, someone that we can bring into the lineup in the seventh spot and the eighth spot and let him earn his way up the lineup. Boy, good question. I guess I'll say MJ. I want to say Cags just to get the people going. But an injury and a three-day stint in the big leagues for MJ, because he's already on the 40-man roster, I got to go with the odds, and the odds say that's the correct answer.
That was our guy Josh Vernier joining us earlier today. If you missed any part of that, be sure to check it out on the podcast page, 96.5 The Fan, also the Odyssey app. All right, coming up on the other side, we'll continue to talk about the hottest team in baseball. Keep it locked in right here. It's The Drive.